Greeting in the name of Jesus. It's good to be with you all again this morning. I'm going to continue talking about the issues that I talked about at the last PBS chapel. I think I had four, but I lumped a couple of them. I think I had five, but I lumped a couple of them together in the last message when I talked about our issues with modern communications. And so this is the third, and I have one more that I'd like to address sometime, Lord willing. This one, I don't really know what title to give it. It has to do with the subject of self-denial. And remember, the context of the discussion that I had with the Bible school students had to do with whether or not, as plain people, we will survive the future. And if it matters or not. And I suggest to you that it does matter. It matters to me. And because I think we have been given a gift. And I suggest to you that if we do not continue to talk about the issue of self-denial, then the type of lifestyle we live won't exist for very long. What is self-denial anyway? Well, it's pretty easy to trace this subject through the scriptures. If you want to turn to a couple of verses with me, Matthew chapter 16, we'll start there. I'm not going to read all the verses that could be read. I'm going to simply look at a few. And you are Bible scholars, you know that these verses are there. But Matthew 16, verse 24, Jesus said to his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he gain the whole world? If he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul, or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" I'm going to stop reading there. So Jesus says very clearly that if a person wants to be his disciple, he's going to have to learn what it is to deny himself and take up his cross. And then he expands on that teaching a little bit and gives us the values that are upside down according to the world that we live in. It doesn't sound right to say that we have to lose our life. But you know, that principle actually does hold true. Whenever we try to protect our health or our family or our money or whatever it is, God has ways of making sure that he gets his share out of us. And I don't mean to say that God is just evil and he wants to do that to make our lives miserable. It's just that when we trust him with our lives and we let him and we deny ourselves and we follow him, he has ways of expanding those things in ways that we never could have dreamed. And anyway, so it's just one of those things that teach us about surrendering ourselves to Christ. Anyway, another verse that I want to read is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And this is in the context of Paul defending his apostleship and how he could have taken pay from the Corinthians and all that. But what I want us to get is down in verse 24, where he talks about, in 1 Corinthians 9, 24, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." So Paul's saying there that in a spiritual race, there's actually a physical dimension to it in which he keeps his body under subjection, because he understands something about his physical body, that if it were let off the leash, as it were, it could actually disqualify him from being able to preach to others. And I want to I want you to just hold that thought about our physical bodies being linked to our spiritual disciplines and how that should work together, because I hope to cover that. One more verse just to show you this whole concept of self-denial goes all the way through the Bible. And you knew this already. I'm not telling you anything new. But Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. We recently had this, I believe, in one of our theme verses. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. So there you have the whole concept of being crucified. That speaks to me of giving up something of ourselves. Now, we claim the tradition of what came out of the Reformation known as the Anabaptists, and we follow that down through, and we get more and more specific till we get to the Swiss Brethren, and then we adopt the name Mennonite, and we move to America. And from the Apostle James all the way to modern Christian martyrs, Christians have understood something about cross-bearing and about suffering. This is not new, and it's actually mostly normal for Christians to have to face some kind of suffering physically. And from my understanding, what I've been taught about American Mennonite history is when we moved from the persecuted Switzerland and Germany, by that time, we had already become the quiet in the land. We didn't want to poke our heads too high, because it's not nice to get your heads cut off. Well, then whenever you get to America, there's not that threat as much anymore. Yes, there are some bouts of persecution, physical persecution, throughout history of the United States Christians, but not very much. By and large, our persecution isn't physical. Well, if your Christianity is based on the concept of suffering, if your understanding of true religion is that if the world hates Christ, then he's going to hate his followers, and you find out that the world doesn't hate you anymore, suddenly either your Christianity isn't valid, or there's other things that make you Christian. And my understanding from what I've read and what I've been told is that our ancestors, instead of focusing so much on suffering, because that wasn't what we were facing so much, the concept was that we are now humble people. We're simple people. We're plain people. And that is how we know if we're following Jesus, because we are denying ourselves certain things. And it's fascinating to me to read history books where the broader culture looked at our ancestors and they said they are very sober, they're very simple people. But then they also wondered if that was so much of a cloak for greed and avarice. And so anyway, we realize that that could, of course, happen. The only reason I bring all of that up is because when you are in a situation where making the decision to follow Christ excludes you from legitimate activities, you know what it is to deny yourself on a level that most of us sitting here don't. If you were really, truly afraid that the day you committed in front of this church in baptism to following Christ, if you were truly afraid that, that when you walked out of here that you would be killed for that, or if you knew that by doing that you had suddenly just barred yourself from most of society, you would understand something about giving up yourself that I don't understand. And so when we accept this concept of humility and simplicity as being a way of life that proves our willingness to deny ourselves, I'm not saying that that is going to get us 100% right, but it is a concept. It is trying to take a fundamental, if you will, of following Jesus and putting it into practice. And that is what we have been given. That is our heritage, practical Christianity. So much so that sometimes we ignore the deeper theological things because we don't know how to put it into practice. we are much more comfortable with practical Christianity. And that's okay. We should be. And I don't think we should necessarily be apologetic about that. So where are we today? Well, with the ease of our lives and with progressive Christian thought, we've been influenced away from practical Christianity in some areas. I believe that. Because through the teaching and influence of the fundamentalist faith alone doctrine, we learn that there is nothing we can do to earn our salvation. And that's actually true. That is theologically correct. But I submit to you that while this is theologically correct, the faith alone, mental assent salvation will slowly erode away the practical outworking of Christianity. Why deny your flesh if faith alone saves you? You just might give up some rewards. You just might not have the nicest spot in heaven. But you'll be saved. And if you were to somehow, I'm going to use the board a little bit later for something else, but if I were to draw this, I'm going to use an example that is really basic and everybody can get their heads around. But if I were to write over here on the right side or your left side of the board, black shoes. Okay, now we just did away with that standard. Maybe I should say dark shoes. So... Let's say black shoes, so it's real easy. We're going to deny ourselves other colors. We're going to wear black shoes. And that's a way that we're going to try to be self-denying, simple, plain people. And you can mock that all day long if you want to. It's fine. I can accept that. But you move from that argument, I don't have to wear black shoes to be a Christian, which is true. You can move from that, and if I were going to write over here, let's say physical involvement with a boyfriend or girlfriend, with the faith alone, mental assent salvation, the slide from I don't have to wear black shoes to be a Christian to I can touch my girlfriend and still be a Christian, that slide happens a lot quicker than you might think. Because we have this idea that I don't have to do anything. There is absolutely nothing I can do to be saved. Y'all following me there? And so when we get to this concept of self-denial, at some point between black shoes and physically touching your girlfriend, there has to be a practical outworking of self-denial. Because it's the same flesh that wants to touch your girlfriend that wants white shoes. I like to think of it this way, and maybe it's not a good way to think about it, but we talk about people being generous. And so I ask the question, is a person generous because he gives, or does he give because he's generous? And that's not supposed to be a trick question. But the point is that if you say you're generous, you can say that all day long, but until you actually do some things and give some things away, nobody's going to know if you're generous or not. And so you can say in your mind that you're denying yourself, but until you actually deny yourself, you haven't practiced self-denial. At some point, this has to work. All right, so what do we mean by self-denial? Well, I have a few ways that I think through self-denial. First of all, denying ourselves is a choice that we make when we are confronted with a choice. Imagine with me that you are hungry for a Snickers bar, but you happen to be 1,000 miles away and you have zero money in your pocket to buy a ticket to get to the place where they sell the Snickers bar. You're not denying yourself a Snicker at that point because there's no physical way to get one. There's no choice involved. You wish you had one, but you can't get one anyway. And so I think for us to imagine that an inaccessible thing, because we're not having the thing that we want, no matter what, if you can't get it, there's no choice involved, and so you're not really denying yourself. I hope you follow that. Look, just wanted to get that out of the way, because when there's no choice, there's no denial. The second thing that I want to talk about when it comes to self-denial is that we can deny ourselves. I'm sorry, let me say it this way. Denying ourselves at the very basic level is exchanging one set of values for another set of values. And I didn't intend for this to actually overlap with last Sunday's message, but that kept coming back to me as I was preparing this. And so I was thinking through it this way. Suppose a young man wants to buy a piece of property or maybe a new truck. Let's say you want to buy a new truck. And so you know that if you want to do this, you're going to have to save up some money. In the process of saving up the money, the opportunity to buy a new hunting rifle or a new boat or to take a trip to Timbuktu comes up. And you know that if you spend the money on one of those things or all three of those things, that your truck is going to be that much farther down the road. You're not going to be able to get to it as quickly because you just spent the thousands of dollars that it took to do those other things. You can deny yourself the rifle or the boat or the trip because you're exchanging that for something that you seem, that you deem to be of greater value. A person that wants to lose weight and become more fit will forgo or deny themselves the extra ice cream because they value fitness over the taste of ice cream in their mouth. That is just exchanging values. There's things that you prefer to have, you want worse than other things. And you can do this physically, that's why I use those examples. There's things that we constantly do this. We deny, you can't have everything in life, and so you have a set of priorities and you decide which ones you're going to pick. And then you deny yourself certain things because you want to attain other things, and that happens very automatically, if you will, on a physical level. You don't really process it that way necessarily, but that is what's happening. Well, the ultimate form of self-denial comes in when we exchange the physical for the spiritual, and I want to draw a little diagram. I borrowed this from Steve Ebersole, and he said I may use it, so I'm not stealing anything from him. But it really helped me to think through things. So if you can picture down here, we have Earth, and up here, we have God. Our physical bodies live on the Earth. And we have physical senses. What are the physical senses? Help me out. There's five of them, right? Okay, we can smell things. What was the other one? Okay. Hearing. I got smelling. Right. One more. Sight. Okay, so we have, those are the things that we use to perceive the world around us, right? And they're physical senses. Now, I think they're actually spiritual senses, or at least in the soul somehow. Because in hell, when the man lifted up his eyes and looked at Abraham, he was able to see, and it talks about the heat, which would indicate the sense of touch, right? Anyway, that's not really our subject. But so this is the physical part. It interacts with our physical world. And this houses our soul. Now, I don't know how to draw a soul, but we understand, I think we understand anyway, that the soul is the real person. Whenever you bury somebody that you know, you're burying their body. When the body dies, right? But we understand the soul to exist forever. We say, whenever we read in Genesis, God gave us a living soul. And that's what we believe separates us from some other parts of the creation. And in our soul, we have emotions, we have our mind, we have our conscience, we have our imagination, we have our heart, and all of that is our soul. Activating or being active in some way. Now, the third part of our being is our spirit. And again, I have no idea how to draw a spirit. But we learn about our spirit whenever it talks about our spirit going back to God. And I don't understand exactly. Sometimes I've seen the spirit and the soul being switched on diagrams like this. But anyway, I like the way this one works. The spiritual part of us is kind of like the physical part of us, only it interacts with the spirit world. This is the way I understand it anyway. If you want some biblical backing for this, you can go to John chapter 4, verse 23. This context is Jesus talking to the woman at the well, and he's talking about worship. And he says, "The hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him." And so worship takes place here. In our spirit. We worship in our spirit. And it connects us to God. And God actually communicates with us through the Spirit. In Romans chapter 8, verse 16, the Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. Okay, so in worship, through our spirit, God can talk to us. And we probably all have a sense of what that's like. It's kind of hard to put it into words because we're now dealing with something that you can't touch or taste or smell. It's in the spirit world. And by the way, the spirit is also how you would connect with evil spirits if you were wanting to do that and open yourself to evil spirits. I believe you could do that. First Corinthians chapter 14, verse 15, also talks about our spirits just a little bit. What is it then? I will pray with the spirit, and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the spirit, and I will sing with the understanding also. So what's the point of all of this? Well, I'm suggesting to you that every time we make a choice, we either do it in favor of the physical man or we do it in favor of the spiritual man. And that's going to move our soul either toward the physical or it's going to move our soul toward the heavenly. And so when we deny ourselves, we are denying our physical selves so that we gain something spiritual. This is the ultimate form of self-denial. This is different than giving up a rifle in favor of a truck. That's all on this level. This is giving up the rifle and the truck in favor of something that God wants, whatever it is, more time to worship. Maybe you give the money all away to help missions or whatever it is. Maybe you give it to your dad or your uncle or somebody that needs it, whatever you want to do with the money or something like that. That's giving up something on the physical level and exchanging it. And it's interesting to me, when you start looking for it, you find all kinds of verses for it. So bear with me, but if you go to 2 Timothy chapter 3, I'm sorry, chapter 2, 2 Timothy chapter 2, Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. So that verse isn't as clear, but it speaks to me of a person choosing to disentangle himself physically from the earthly things because he is a soldier of Jesus Christ, because he is trying to please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. Now, there's two verses that are more Titus. Titus chapter 2 is what I wanted. Titus chapter 2, verse 11. For the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify himself unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. So do you see there what I see? That when we deny ungodliness and worldly lusts, we are helping ourselves to look for the blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior Jesus Christ. It seems pretty clear that whenever we give up things in the physical, that we gain in the spiritual. And then there's one more verse that makes it even more powerful, found in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. And I've read that verse so many times, but never in the context of this kind of thinking. It's very clear. We stay away from fleshly desires because they fight against the soul. They're trying to pull our soul away from God. And that's the reason we deny ourselves. And so, at the risk of sounding like an ascetic, or someone who believes that we should deny all fleshly impulses, I do believe that every physical activity we engage in, even legitimate activities, bind us in a way to the physical. And some of them we have to do, okay? We have to eat and we have to sleep and we have to do certain things. I'm not saying that we have to deny all of that. And yet I think it's also, well, I'll get to that here in a little bit. I'll just say it now and then I'll probably repeat it later. But if you think about the whole spiritual discipline of fasting, for instance, it's denying yourself of food, right? Which is a totally legitimate fleshly lust, fleshly desire. Totally legitimate. But Jesus actually says, when ye fast, like he expects us to. And we're doing that. We're exchanging a meal or two in favor of something spiritual. And if we're going to be people of God, and if we're going to be real about it, this is all going to have to get practical. And eventually, what we feed, whether it's our flesh or our spirit, is going to drag our soul down or it's going to pull it up. So let's make this practical. I just have a couple of things to wrap up here, and it won't even take that long, I don't think. Let's go back to talking about shoes. Okay, I use this because it's so easy to use and because it's so easy to mock. Okay, that's the reason I keep going back to this. It's really easy to make fun of somebody who wears black shoes And they sincerely believe that that's going to help them deny themselves. It's easy to make fun of that. And so maybe we can make fun of that. But at some point in the discussion about shoes, we need to understand that we have enough shoes, that you don't need 20 pairs. And probably somewhere between the one black pair and the 20 black and blue and red and white and green pairs, you have to deny yourself somewhere. It has to become practical. And I'm making this really almost a caricature so that we can get a hold of it, so that it makes sense. Now, I don't really think that that's where we are, and yet take the shoes, use it as an illustration for a bunch of other areas. At some point, we have to say enough is enough. It's time to stop. I don't need any more, because if I keep getting more, it's going to keep pulling my soul toward the earthly. It's going to bind me to the earthly, and I'm not investing in the spiritual. At some point, it has to be real. And maybe to make it more practical, I'll talk to different groups of people here this morning. And so I'm going to pick on young men again, because I was a young man one time, still am actually. But I'm suggesting to you young men, I'm telling you that when you think about your spirit and your soul and your fleshly body, that there has to be a place in your life where you deny yourself certain things. There has to come a point where that's enough lights on the truck. You don't actually need bigger tires on the truck. You don't actually have to put a special exhaust on the truck. You don't have to buy the most expensive hunting rifle or any rifle. Because whenever we do those things, we're binding ourselves to the earthly. And we're moving our souls away from God. And this is true for all kinds of toys and pleasures. I picked on trucks because they're easy to pick on. But it's you can do that. And, you know, we talk about pleasure seeking. And I'm looking at you young men because we pick on you a lot. Old men do a lot of pleasure seeking too. We're going to talk to the old men in a little bit. But I understand the need of recreation. But did you ever think about how silly it is that if you go on recreation and you fly around on a jet ski or a racing boat or a four-wheeler or a dirt bike or something like that, and you're more tired when you're done, what have you recreated? You see what I mean? There's a total difference between that kind of recreation and the kind of recreation that you can get if you're floating down the river in a canoe. I can accept that you might want to spend some money on a canoe, because there is something about just doing that that is kind of, it's fine. I don't do canoeing necessarily myself, but I can understand how that could be recreational. I can understand how hiking in the woods could be recreational. And I can even understand how a little bit of hunting and fishing can be recreational. But whenever we have to spend our weekends doing those things, and all of our money and all of our time goes into that, and we have to keep getting the latest and the greatest, at some point we need to deny ourselves, right? At some point we need to say, that's enough. I have enough fishing rods. I don't need another gun. I don't need more accessories on my truck. I don't have to spend the weekend mudding around on the four-wheeler. those are things that young men probably face. Anyway, I was going to talk to the young ladies, but there's only three of you sitting up here, so I'm not sure if I should do this. I don't even know what young ladies face, but I am suspicious that the same temptations that would make a young man put more lights on his truck probably show up in a different way. It's the same flesh. It's the same desire to be noticed or whatever it is. But it probably shows up in a little different way. Maybe it's the little neat cell phone case, or maybe it's the fancy sleeve endings on the dress. Maybe it's the flip-flops, or I don't even know what they all are. But the cute sweaters or whatever it is. The point, though, is at some point you're going to have to realize that if you're feeding your fleshly appetites with all of these things, that it's just as wrong, even if it's not as raw as what we talked about on the men's side of the issue. And again, we older ones are not necessarily exempt. Maybe we have learned as older people that it's just silly to keep dolling up a pickup truck or to keep making fancy dress patterns. Maybe we've learned that that's silly. But then we have a whole other bunch of issues that we face that will drag our souls down. Or we can exchange it and build our souls up and we can move them toward God. We need to know when it's enough. We don't need to buy every acre that's available to us. We don't need to keep expanding our businesses. We don't need to be on every social media platform. Maybe that's a young person's thing. I don't know, but I've seen some old people do the same thing. We just need to know that there's a time to stop, to deny ourselves, even though it would be really fun to do something more than what we've been doing. I think about food, and I think about how amazing it is that we have so much of it. And you know, I like to eat food. But I just wonder if we are doing very well at knowing when to deny ourselves the next helping. I know we're not supposed to talk about fasting because the Bible tells us we're not supposed to talk about it. But do you suppose that it would be easier to fast if the only thing you had to give up was just one more dish of rice and beans? I don't know the answer to that question, because our meals at our house are very interesting, and it's really hard to give up another interesting meal. And I'm not blaming my wife for my lack of spiritual disciplines. I'm just saying that we need to learn how to deny ourselves sometimes, right? And we need to know that good food is fine, but the fourth or fifth helping of good food probably isn't fine. Maybe I'm preaching to the choir here, I don't know. But it's something that I think is real. I don't even know what else to talk about, because there's so many things in our world. As I was sitting in Sunday school this morning, the question came up about oppositions that we face, and we discussed that a little bit. And I think we all kind of have this understanding that we don't face that much opposition. The world is pretty friendly, and it is. But I wonder if you were somehow able to get the statistics of every person who recanted during the awful persecution, the physical persecution of times that have passed, and even modern persecution. If you could somehow get the statistics and compare them with the statistics of people that have fallen away because of the lust of the flesh, because of the easy life, because of the entertainment, and because of all of the goodies and stuff that we have in our lives, I wonder what those lists would look like. I really wonder how many more people we might lose through ease. And isn't that a form of persecution? Isn't that an opposition? If you were the devil trying to mastermind something, would you care how you got people to fall? And if we're going to be practical Christians, then we need to realize that somehow this all needs to work out. And the point of trying to bring all of these things into practice is to simply sharpen our conscience. It's one thing to just talk about the concepts, and I think you all get this concept, and you're not dumb. It's easy to understand this, that our choices will either move our spirit one way or our soul one way or the other. But trying to make it practical is simply to sharpen our conscience and to try to mind the things of the Spirit. And I don't think there is anything wrong with one of you or all of you, all of us, coming to a conclusion and saying, you know what, I will not indulge beyond a certain... Okay, let's make it really practical. Let's just say that for us men, that we choose that we are not going to buy a certain... We're not going to buy a vehicle over a certain trim level. We're just not going to do it. You can hoot at that if you want to. But I think that that would be a fine thing to do. Because, again, at some point, this has to become practical. At some point, it has to be real. And I think that it would be very easy to lose our way because our current culture makes it so easy to indulge in fleshly lusts that war against the soul, as Peter says. It makes it so easy to do. And the current culture of Christianity teaches us that if Jesus were here, he would live it up too. And so we're fighting two things here. We're fighting false teaching and we're fighting an easy culture. And so for us to make those kinds of decisions is not something to scoff at. It's not something to say, well, I don't need to do. It might actually be something we should do. So in conclusion, let's just remember that every day we're faced with opportunities to either build our spirits, our souls toward God, or to bind them to more earthly things. And it's up to us how we're going to do that.